Do you think life is simpler after you retire? For some, it's actually more complicated when facing issues about health, estate plans, probate, long-term care, and more. That's why attorney CPA Joe Cordell hosts Elder Talk, providing smart strategies for seniors and an open forum for older adults with important questions about their future. Here's attorney CPA Joe Cordell.
You know, there's probably nothing that we think of when we think about our loved ones as they age that we think of more often than about their safety and even their connectedness. In other words, the extent to which they're able to communicate with us and us to them about their needs or concerns or safety, et cetera. And yet, you know, there's this crisis of sorts in this area because so many people have loved ones that are not in their home or they do not have daily and constant access. So there's this concern about their driving. There's this concern about the extent to which they're going to follow up on a medical issue. Are they taking their medications? Have they fallen in their house and we don't know about it? I mean, how many of us have loved ones who live hours away? And even those who live across the city, we may be wondering throughout the day, you know, what are they doing? Are they safe, et cetera? So we have a wonderful guest today whose career is dedicated to these very questions. Vicki Sprawl, she's with an organization. She's president of an organization called Gray Matters Alliance. Great name, Gray Matters Alliance. And kind of the focus of this organization is to solve problems relating to safety and connectedness of seniors. I like that word, connectedness, because mm-hmm. it picks up a lot of things. It picks up, you know, communicating directly by voice, but also means getting information mm-hmm. and also having them be able to initiate contacts. So as we talked about the show, Susan, we talked about various ways in which we could go with this topic and that we only have an hour here. Mm-hmm. So we felt that perhaps the ways to maximize our time with Vicki Sprawl would be to take some time at the outset of the show and focus specifically on driving.
A very practical thing that many seniors struggle with.
Yeah, and then step back and talk about some of the other issues and just see how much we can get in this limited time that's available to us.
Sounds like a plan. Vicki has a presentation that she gives to community groups all about seniors and assessing the risks of driving. How do you know when your parent may need to make some changes with driving? How do you have those conversations? So that's where we're going to jump in, Vicki, and welcome to the show.
Well, thanks. Thanks for having
welcome.
Me. I appreciate it. Nice to be here.
Well, let's start out then and talk about one area that your organization helps with, and that's concerns about driving. Mm-hmm. And we all have a vested interest in this conversation.
We do.
Oh, yes, we do.
And so tell me how a typical matter comes to your attention.
Well, it is a very touchy subject. And you know, there's a lot of fights that go over this whole topic.
And disagreement as to whether.
Disagreement. Oh, yeah. Oh boy. I mean.
I'm fine. I'm good enough to drive to the store.
Yes.
As long as I don't go on the highway, I'm okay. I've heard them
yes.
all.
Oh, the objections. You'll hear them all. I mean. The statistics are very bad out there. So, you know, seniors are at an elevated risk. We all are at a risk for, you know, a traffic accident, but they are more elevated. So some of the objections you hear, I can still drive, I drive fine. You have to get that out of your head.
Who typically makes the initial contact?
Well, the initial contact usually typically is the adult child. So they've been referred to me by somebody, perhaps a doctor. Doctors hate to have this conversation. So they will pass it off to somebody
yeah.
else. They'd rather have the end of life talk, believe it or not, than the give up the keys talk.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I get adult children, I get friends, I get church members that will call. Sometimes the senior themselves will call me, and I love those calls.
Now, that's impressive.
Yeah. That is very
Isn't
impressive.
Isn't it? I like those the best because, you know, they're being proactive. They realize that something is amiss, or perhaps they just want to just take that preventative measure. You know, they want to be safe out there, which
Or
I
maybe
applaud.
They're calling from a police station.
Right. Somebody had a conversation with them, and they're like, oh, boy, I better get on this one. But self-awareness is key. At our age even, you know, self-awareness, you're put on a medication that's new to you, you have to be aware of what implications is going to happen out on the streets. So that's usually my typical caller.
So kind of walk us through this. So you get a contact often from, let's assume it's a child,
mm-hmm.
an adult child. contacts you and says they're concerned about mom or dad.
Sure.
So take us through the steps from there and what your contribution is.
Sure. So it usually falls in a few different buckets. Usually I'm getting a call because there is a decline cognitively or mobility. And sometimes it is just that preventative benchmark. A lot of people feel that when you hit a certain age, that's when they need to be tested. And that's the one thing people need to know is age is not a factor necessarily. It's the skills. So people age differently. You know, I may pass an 85-year-old, but I've also had a client in their early 60s who had early onset dementia. So, you know, people do age at different stages.
So somebody can drive much better at, say, 85 than perhaps another person who's just 75.
Exactly.
Or 70.
Everybody ages differently. How you take care of
yourself.
That's
interesting.
Your genetics. I mean, all of that. All of that plays a role.
So is there typically an event, though, that triggered this call?
Sometimes there's an event. I mean, you know, I'll get calls, for example, that somebody's just getting out of rehab from a stroke. Mm. Or they're getting out of rehab from a hip or a back surgery. So there's your mobility issues. I will get calls from people that mom or dad got lost driving. That's really the scarier
one. I can
one.
See that. Mm-hmm.
That one's a scary one because you and I, when we get lost, we know we're lost. We rationalize through it. We call somebody. We reset our GPS. We pull over. We talk to somebody. They don't know they're lost to get help.
They just know they keep driving and they're driving and they're not getting where they think they're supposed to be.
Right. Or sometimes they know they're lost, but they're too embarrassed. Or this has happened before.
I'm sure that happened.
This has happened before and they know, oh boy, if I go back and say I was lost one more time, that's it for me.
Right. That's such a natural response. I mean, any of us would think, gee, if I report this to my son or daughter, this could be the
end of it. You're doing yourself in.
And no one wants to. Well, not no one. There are those few, but most people are not willing to give up those keys because it's a loss of independence.
Oh, it's a total loss of independence. Absolutely. I mean, you got to remember, too, that they've had a lot of other losses up to this point.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
You know, some of them have lost their homes. They've had to go into communities or living with the adult children.
Assisted living.
They've lost a spouse. They've lost a pet.
That's a very good point. Mm-hmm. I mean, this cascade of losses and now this.
And now this. Right. And this is their last little bit of independence. I mean, you and I, we go out every day. We socialize. We have coworkers. We do happy hours. We visit friends. Their once-a-week card game with their buddies at the VFW hall, that's their whole world.
Right.
You know, and we forget that. We forget. Mm. We're always busy. I mean, sometimes at the end of the day, you don't want to talk to anybody else. And these seniors, when they, you know, the beauty shop is a big deal to a lot of them. The grocery store is an event.
Sure. I mean, if you're otherwise sitting around.
Right. It's very isolating.
So tell me then, you get the call, you get the information. Will you contact this parent and arrange for a meeting at their home or what?
Yeah, what we do is I will spend, you know, however long the adult children want to spend on the phone with me. I've been on for hours sometimes. They're telling me the whole story and progression of why they're calling me. So I get that side of the story because there's always the other side. The senior side is completely different every single time. So I get as much information as I can. I make sure that their loved one knows I'm coming and at what time and at what date.
How's the reception you get from the loved one?
Usually by the time I get there, they're okay with it. Because the discussion's usually been something like this. Well, if a third party tells me not to drive, then I won't. But if you tell me not to drive, then I'm not listening to you.
Okay.
So they're pretty receptive because they have a 50-50 shot, you know? They're like, all right, I'm going to play the odds here and hope this... I had a man just 2 weeks ago. He collects rocks from China. I'm not sure why he gets these things, but they're really kind of cool. But he handed me one when I got there. I think they're bribing me when I walk in the door, like, here's a present. Can I offer you some cake?
Well,
you
know? And another thing that you offer them, though, is an objective opinion.
Right. See, I don't have that family dynamic history.
Right.
I mean, when I go to a client's home, you can almost visualize what Thanksgiving dinner's like. And sometimes it's not good. The emotion and opinions come out just... It's unbelievable. The siblings are fighting with each other. So I'm a third party. I don't have a history with this family. You can't come back and tell me something I did when I was a teenager, you know, as an objection. That's another thing that you hear is, you know, well, I didn't take your keys away when you were a teenager and you got in a fender bender. I didn't take your keys away when you got a ticket. And those are objections that the older adult will tell their child. Mm-hmm. They're not going to tell
that
to me, you know? Yeah. So they're pretty okay with me coming in. I mean, some of them have their guard up when I first get there. Our goal and our mission really is to build that trust. So we have a learning conversation with them probably the first couple hours. It's just to get to know them. And when you go to their house, it's a lot easier to build that trust. I can look around and see pictures of their grandkids. We can talk about that, you know, their hobbies, what they collect. I had a lady who collects everything strawberry in her house. We talked for hours about it. But in between all of that, I throw in some paper and pencil exercises, very easy cognitive exercises. A lot of them they've done before in doctor's offices.
And so you've explained to them, though, when you arrive, of course, they know before you're coming, coming. And then you explain to them, though, that you're wanting to objectively determine if they have this problem or not. So they get it that it's not a he said, she said.
Right.
Are they a little fearful at the idea of taking a test, especially a paper, pencil and paper
test? We call it exercises, and we don't call it a test. Nothing's ever graded. There's no pass or fail. It's kind of a cumulative between the conversation and the cognitive exercises. If we get to the driving portion, it kind of all falls together. They are nervous. They're very nervous. And the reason we designed it so that we go to their house is to take that stress out. We know, and we want to give them every possible chance to pass. I mean, we're on their side.
To demonstrate their ability.
We're on their side.
And do you have some that just from talking with them and then seeing the exercises that you don't even go to the driving thing?
Exactly. Here, I'll pass this around. And obviously your listeners can't hear this or see this, but there's something called the clock test. And it's done in doctor's offices every day. It has been shown that if they can't do the clock test, which is simply drawing the face of a clock, putting in the numbers, setting the hands to 10 after 11. This is to demonstrate spatial, executive function, that sort of thing. If they can't handle this part of it, they shouldn't be driving. And from these examples, and unfortunately your listeners can't see it, but they're out there. You know, the numbers are outside the face. The hands are outside the face. The numbers aren't in order. It's not a round clock. It's pretty bad. And so when I get to that point, that's my telltale sign. If I see that, it's a no-go. I mean, you know.
So we have listeners all across St. Louis who are right now drawing a
circle.
So there's a number of things that can go wrong in this little test. You can have, if they put the numbers outside the clock, that's definitely a problem.
That's a problem.
It's square versus round.
Yeah. I mean, think about all the decisions you make when you're driving and how often you have to multitask. These are split-second decisions you have to make. You know, and, you know, the new roundabouts that are out there, you have to navigate that. The crossover highways.
The divergent diamond. That's a new one.
It's hard. It's confusing for me, you know, so I can only imagine for them. So, but this is a good sign on whether or not we can proceed. There's been some gray areas where I'm like, all right, listen, let's go for the driving exercise.
Yeah. If it's a close call, you give them the benefit of the doubt.
I give them the benefit of the doubt. It's white knuckled all the way. Some of them we've only left the neighborhood and it's like, you need to turn around. We're going back.
Now, but let me ask you though about that part of the test. So you've done this cognitive, you've visited with them, and I know that's important. Mm-hmm. You have a relationship. And so let's say you get to the point where you're going to go on this drive. Will this drive, if it's going to occur, typically occur in the first meeting?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So you're in the car, and do you have concerns if the speed of driving?
Oh, it's everything.
So it's everything. So speed itself, even though they're stopping at the stop signs.
Yeah.
Because I hear that argument from people I'll leave unnamed, but they point out that, look, I stop at the stop signs. Mm-hmm. I know the lights. I know where to turn. But the speed.
Oh, it's
painful.
It's either slow, but, you know, I get some lead foot people, too. Oh, boy. Those are the scarier ones. I'd rather much be in a car with somebody going slow than fast. But, you know, and it's other things besides the actual driving. It's, can you get to your car okay? Mm-hmm. Can you get in and out of your car without falling? And what do you do when you get to your destination? You know, what do you do when you get to Schnucks and you have to push the cart and you can barely walk? Mm-hmm. So there's all of that, too. There's the mobility issue by far is very scary just even getting into the car.
Because it seems to me that if they have such a difficult time getting in, their reflexes to hit that brake are not even going to be close to what they need to be.
Absolutely. And you want the outcome of this to be successful. You don't, you ultimately, the name of the game, if you want to call it that, is for them to ultimately say, I need to retire. That gives them the empowerment, not their child telling them they can't drive anymore.
Well, but is there not sometimes a conflict of interest? This is the lawyer in me. So the person who's calling you, and your services, there's a charge for your services.
Yes.
So I'm being devil's advocate here.
Yes.
So the person that calls you and that you have the initial contact with is the son or daughter, and let's assume they're pretty confident. You know, mom shouldn't be driving. You need to meet with her, and you're going to definitely see this, and you need to tell her that. So this person has probably retained you. Is that fair to say? Meaning that the compensation would often come from the kids versus...
Yeah, and I do get a lot of the... Actually, the seniors do pay a lot also.
So, you know what? I can imagine being in an awkward situation where... Put aside the compensation. But, you know, you have this first contact and you like the person. You want to do a good job for them. And then meanwhile, you've developed this relationship with this older person. And the kid is convinced, you know, it's very clear. Mom should not be driving. And you say, well, you know, mom did okay. And I don't think that. Do you find that you're having to negotiate between these two parties?
Absolutely. All the time. I'm either the hero to the senior or the bad guy to the senior and to the adult
and
child
versa.
Also. And I just had a couple weeks ago, this gentleman, he was diagnosed with Alzheimer's 10 years ago.
10 years ago.
I have some issues on whether or not he really has Alzheimer's, but I'm not a professional, so I can't talk about that. But I passed him. There was not, and on the phone, she had me convinced that when I got there, it'd just be a conversation, some cognitive exercises, no drive,
and
no
done.
Nothing, and done.
Yeah.
Pouring down, I actually went on a day when it was raining because I thought, we're not going to drive. Oh, was I wrong? I mean, he was as fluid, conversationally wise, as you and I are here. His cognitive exercises were spot on. One of the best clocks I've ever seen drawn. So I'm like, you know, I was basically, you know, and his adult daughter sat in on the whole thing. And she's like, oh my God, you know, she was amazed that this was happening. And I said, I have to take him for the driving exercise. He has not given me one clue as to why we shouldn't. So, yeah, we went into the car, and guess what? He did a fantastic job. He hasn't driven in 10 years.
Oh, my word.
Now, I want to come back to that, and I'm really good at being devil's advocate, I guess. But I'm wondering, is it possible, and don't answer this yet, we're going to take a break. Is it possible, though, that there can be episodes, meaning someone who seems okay, and then they have these episodes? Mm-hmm. And we'll be back in a moment to pick up with this conversation.
You're listening to Elder Talk, providing smart strategies for seniors, presented by Cordell Planning Partners, your elder law advisors. And now, attorney CPA Joe Cordell.
We're back with Vicki Sprawl, president of Gray Matters Alliance, an organization dedicated to helping seniors with safety and connectedness. Now, probably nothing bears more visibly on the subject of safety, perhaps, than older people who are driving, and are they in fact able to do it? And some are unfairly stereotyped, and so we have somebody who's one of the functions of their organization is to do an assessment. So before we went into the break, Vicki was telling us that you know, she's had occasions where someone, you know, had been diagnosed with Alzheimer's, and she goes out and she does a very thorough assessment, including riding with them. They seem okay. But I just wonder, to what extent are there cases where people do, maybe they have episodes of disorientation or whatever?
And that is very true. And I do state that in my report. You know, I'm only there for 3 hours. And when I'm on the phone call with the adult child to begin with to set it up, you know, I always ask, are they better in the morning or in the afternoon? Some get up sharp because they've had a good night's rest, and some need a while to get going for the day. So always, you know, again, I want to be on the senior side. I want to give them every last chance. So I'll go at the best time that the family
for them to
it.
Perform. Yeah.
So, and I do state that, but you can still see glimpses of it, you know, even if they're on their best behavior and they're, you know, cognitively great that day. And I do make it a point to say that my recommendations should not be the end all. I mean, the state, the police, your doctor, mm-hmm. they will all supersede me
at any
time. And, you know, things to watch for. You know, there's definitely things to watch for even after I leave.
And of course, your conversations with the child and the parent, you know, would fish or search for those things that that may not be visible when you're there.
Oh, absolutely.
For example, if it's periodic or whatnot.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, keep track. You know, does mom dress to the nines to go to the grocery store and now all of a sudden she's a little unkept and her clothes are mismatched? Are bills not being paid? Are they on a new medication? You know, they see multiple doctors, they get multiple medications, and some conflict with each other and some conflict with driving. RoadWiseRx.com is a great site to go to check your medicines. But there's all these little visual and hearing things. You just need to keep an eye on them, even after I leave. I mean, when you age, you're naturally declining. So just because I was there today doesn't mean that 6 months from now they're just as good. So you kind of always have to keep an eye on it.
So let's assume then that someone does meet the minimum threshold after your assessment.
Mm-hmm.
What are the, you know, the five or so best pieces of advice you would give them to minimize the chance that they'll have an accident?
Right. Well, you know, one is to be self-aware, you know, see if there's anything that you're noticing about yourself that you shouldn't. Falls are an indicator also. If you've had more than two falls in the prior year, your chances are 1.5 times more likely that you'll be in an accident. And, you know, 2 times greater that you'll be at fault for that accident. And I hate to burst everybody's bubbles, but eating right and exercising, nobody likes to hear that, but it's true for everything you do in your life. It does prolong your driving career.
Really?
Absolutely.
That's not as obvious to me. I mean, I see it prolongs health, but
yeah, well, in your health.
Your health prolongs
your driving.
Yeah,
so, yeah.
It
is. You know, it's a domino effect. Social connectiveness, like we talked about, you know, stay connected with your peers. That keeps you active. That keeps you younger. And you just, you know, you just want to, you want to stay healthy for multiple reasons.
What do you say to them regarding driving at night?
Yeah, well, you know, and if I pass somebody, it's not just a free-for-all necessarily.
So it can be with restrictions?
With restrictions. And most of the time, if I do pass somebody, there are restrictions. No night driving, no inclement weather.
I see.
Any new medications, any medications you're on now that make you drowsy, non-peak hours, you know, try to drive between 10 and 2.
So it's not an all or nothing thing. That makes a lot more sense to me. So often, you know, people will be not necessarily on one end or the other of the continuum. They either drive or they don't drive. But it's more often than not the case that you will say, okay, this person is okay to drive under these conditions.
Exactly. And there are situations where, let's say they just got out of rehab. They've been in there 6 months for a stroke or a hip replacement, what have you. They haven't driven in a while. They're out of practice. I might go through the whole thing with them, and they might be a little, you know, tentative behind the wheel, not very assertive. You kind of need to be assertive behind the wheel. I will pass them with the contingency that they practice with a family member. I want you to practice for about 6 weeks or so. I'm going to come back out, no cost, and I'll reevaluate the driving portion. I just want to make sure you got back up to speed.
It's kind of like your learner's permit.
Exactly. I mean, if you've ever gone on vacation, you come back, you haven't driven in a while, it's kind of awkward at first. You know, and that's the same with them. They haven't driven in a while. This man that I passed, 10 years had gone by before he had driven.
Yeah. Wow.
So, and he did fine. I mean, so everybody's different.
It's like bicycles and cars, you know.
There you go.
So do you find, though, that this tactic that is commonly used, at least from what I've seen, that older people will prefer to not be on an expressway.
Oh, yeah.
And so they'll get on these side streets with all these stop signs and lights and curves It just seemed to me that it would be simpler to get on the expressway and get there. You see that?
Oh, yeah. That's a scary one. Almost 100% of my clients do not go on the highway. They just don't. They're fearful of it. It's too fast. You know, people are, you know, moving. There's construction. And, I had one lady that she would only do right-hand turns. So she does not like to make left-hand turns. It would take her forever to get anywhere. You know, God love her. She just wanted to do right-hand turns.
But she still has her independence in her
mind. There you go.
And that's what allows her that connectedness.
Exactly. But, you know, I mean, you know, the highways are dangerous, but some of these intersections are even worse. You know, 40% of all fatal accidents for age 70 or over happen at intersections. And the other most dangerous place, parking lots. So, you know, you don't want them on the parking lots either, but that's where they are.
Well, and the side streets have a lot of kids on them.
Oh, yeah.
It seems like that would be where you would have your kids. And, I mean, certainly wouldn't want
to
hit a kid or anything like that if you can't stop quickly because the ball has run out into the street. That's where my mind goes.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, you got vision issues, your peripheral. A lot of people like to hug the curb or cross the center line. Mm-hmm. So you get that a lot. But yeah, there's a lot of, you know, left-hand turns, a lot of accidents. At the age of 65 and above, for every year, there's an 8% greater chance that you'll be involved in an accident due to a left-hand turn.
And you know, you hear so many of these accidents that are so serious over left-hand turns.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
It provides, I guess, the best opportunity for someone to be hit head, not head-on so much as
T-boned.
Directly
T-boned. Into
the
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, you've got to judge the speed of the other people. You've got to judge how wide the gap is.
Right.
You've got to judge how long it's going to take you to turn,
that's right.
which everybody turns at different rates.
Right.
And there's some people are really cautious and they're really going slow and
exactly,
you know, or fast or something like that.
A lot of executive functioning going on there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to get it all in at the same time.
So let's talk a little more generally then about the issues of safety and connectedness that the Gray Matters is involved with. So driving, I can see, is a big deal on the subject of safety and connectedness. I mean, the magnitude of the impact, as you point out, on older people, that's often their lifeline for their social life, their groceries, et cetera. And while they may be able to develop alternatives, I can see how, if I were an older person, that would be a huge sacrifice.
Absolutely. I mean, studies have shown early retirement from driving that wasn't your choice can lead to early death. Depression, isolation, sickness, it's all a very slippery slope.
You know, so it's worth the effort to try to keep older people driving. And it's almost rather than err in a very conservative way about assuring that they don't drive. And I can see there's a part of your instinct that says, look, if there's any doubt whatsoever, they shouldn't be driving. And I can see that argument being made. But I think there's something on the other side of the scales that so often gets neglected, and that's that, wait, let's consider also the magnitude of this impact.
Right.
And it might be that people like you can come in, your organization can come in, you can perhaps get someone to where they are able to drive capably for an additional several years from what they otherwise would. So people can be premature, can't they, about saying to mom or dad, you know, you really shouldn't be driving.
Yeah, and I mean, there's good ways and bad ways to do everything, but yeah, I mean, you know, if you've not been in the car with them to observe anything, how are you to say they shouldn't be driving?
Yeah.
Right? So, I mean, you know, that's an objection you're going to hear from them. Well, you never drive with me, so why are you taking my keys away? Or the other one, I've never been in an accident or I've gotten a ticket, and why are you taking my keys away? That's a hard one.
Yeah.
That's a hard one. And again, you have to go back to their skills and facts, not their age, not emotion, and not opinion. And that's where a lot of family members kind of drop the ball. It's very emotional.
And we've all, no matter what our age, we've all made mistakes driving.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, not one of us has not made a mistake driving.
Yeah.
And so the question becomes is that just a regular mistake because they got a little distracted?
Right.
Or is that an age issue and an inability issue? And that's where you can come in and help. And
exactly.
Yeah, and people talk about ageism. You know, you talk about sexism and other forms of discrimination. But ageism is a real form, and you call attention to it, Susan, with that example, is you know, are you judging the person more harshly for an error than you would if they were 30 years younger?
Right.
I mean, I ride with my early 20s daughters, and who I'm sure, relatively speaking, are good drivers, but I see mistakes, and I can easily magnify that and say, you know, should they be driving?
Right.
Well, if you add 60 years, we'd be concluding that they should be losing their keys.
If my 80-year-old's, you know, parents did what my 20-year-old is doing, I'd be going, no. Yeah. And I'm already saying to my 20-year-old, are you sure about that?
Yeah, Vicki, I'll be one of those. If you showed up at my house in 10, 15 years, I'd be one of those making the argument, look, I let them keep their keys
when they shouldn't have had them.
Exactly.
And I will tell you, seniors actually are safer drivers than teenagers.
Oh, they are, I'm sure.
I mean, statistically, they are. I mean, and, you know, teenagers, you know, they're You've got testosterone if it's a guy, you know. There's no offense there, Joe.
Yeah, some alcohol.
Yeah, alcohol, texting, they're immature, they're inexperienced. Mm-hmm. And so while they'll get better and level off, seniors, you know, go the opposite way.
Yeah.
So, and that's the hard argument to make.
Yeah, it's and so I see all these issues that come up, and I wanted to think of it just also outside of the driving context. I mean, when you have people living their homes, they're older. This is my dog that you're hearing in the back.
And he's adorable,
my
by the
Belgian
way.
Malinois, no. Who escorts me here to this studio. Anyway, so you hear people that are living at home, and for whatever reason, their family can't check in on them constantly, but they have concerns about their falling or medications and other issues.
Exactly.
One thing that your company does, which again is Gray Matters Alliance, is that you all have tools or technologies that allow people to watch after and get informed about their loved ones from a distance.
Exactly. It allows them to stay at, you know, age in place, which is everybody wants to do. Everybody wants to live at home. Nobody wants to go outside. So, yeah, it's a technology, and really it's a big touch screen that goes in the home. It gives them a window to the outside world. Family members can upload anything and everything on this thing, photos and letters and videos and so on. But really the main crux of it is to keep them safe. So you might put motion sensors out there that would indicate whether or not mom got out of bed. So you would set the alerts and texts that would go to you. If mom doesn't get out of bed between the hours of 7 a.m. and 9 a.m. to text me, something's wrong.
And so motion detectors, too?
Motion, contact sensors. You know, did mom access the refrigerator today? Did she eat?
Good question.
Pressure mat.
Shouldn't we have seen this coming, Susan?
We should have.
I mean, the technology being what it is.
But it's very unobtrusive. So we're not watching them, like physically watching them every move. This is all just being monitored seamlessly behind the scenes, and we would get texts and calls and emails if something is
arising.
But
you could, and again, not with the intention of being intrusive, but you could have cameras.
Oh, absolutely. From a safety standpoint, yeah.
Yeah, and I can see how that would be useful to be able to look in on mom or dad.
I've got cameras in my house.
Yeah.
And I don't have any older people in my house, but you know, as a safety measure, you know, that's
And with our children, some people do it with younger children.
Right.
And so, I mean, I can see a place for that. I really do. And I guess I should have seen this coming. But when I hear and knew that your company does this sort of thing, I it just seemed inevitable.
Yes.
You have the ability to monitor the safety and well-being of your loved ones from 1,000 miles on the other side of the world.
On the other side of the world, right. And, you know, it's expensive out there, you know. You want to have somebody come in and watch your dad, which is great. So this could be a supplement. It's never meant to replace human interaction at all. But the cost for healthcare is so expensive now that you got to have some other means in place, and this just gives families some peace of mind.
Well, and
knowing
so
something else there.
I'm sorry. No, so many in-home health assistance programs are 3 days a week.
Right.
This can provide for the other 2 days or the other 4 days, I guess, the weekend too. But just so that you know that they're taking their medicine, did they eat those types of things that we take for granted?
You are correct.
But
and even the home healthcare agencies can utilize this. Just because the family has it in their home, they can give them permission, the home health care agency's permission, to also monitor. So they can monitor off-site as well as on-site.
So this equipment is, or this technology is picking up not only their movements, in other words, have they fallen, are they getting up and about, but also certain metabolic factors or things like blood pressure, etc.
Exactly. A lot of people are supposed to watch their blood pressure daily and mark it down and then bring it to the doctor 30 days later. Your oxygen, your pulse. Some people have weight issues. They're not eating
amazing
enough, or they're too heavy and they need to lose weight. Temperature, you know, you want to watch your temperature rates every day. And so, you know, while the senior would do it to themselves or a caregiver would do these functions, you know, provide the blood pressure and that sort of thing, it Bluetooths into the system. And it's all encrypted, all HIPAA compliant, so there's no safety issues there. And this can, and I a million miles away, can see mom's blood pressure every single day.
How fascinating this is. We're going to come back and pick up on this topic of technology and safety for the aged.
You're listening to Elder Talk, providing smart strategies for seniors, presented by Cordell Planning Partners, your elder law advisors, and now attorney CPA Joe Cordell.
Okay, back with Vicki Sprawl, president of Gray Matters Alliance, and we're talking about safety and connectedness for seniors. And before we went into the break, we were talking about the technology that's available. Her company offers it. I'm sure there are others that do similar things.
Absolutely.
And it's just fascinating to me that at one time I was very impressed with the idea that you could have someone at a booth, and for example, an ICU center or a CCU unit, where people are 10, 20, 30 feet away, and they can constantly see everything
monitor.
That's going on
right.
in that room. They have the ability to monitor every aspect of their health remotely. And here we have the capacity to do that from the other side of the world, and not to the same degree, but the fundamentals are the same,
right.
that you're monitoring the health of your loved ones from afar.
Right.
It's amazing. And give us some idea of what a service like this may cost.
For in-home, you know, because these also go into retirement communities and home healthcare agencies use us. Hospice also uses us. Basically, it comes with the software and a big, big touch screen that's easy to use. No technology is needed. That is $8.99. That goes in the home. One-time fee. And it's by far way, way cheaper than long-term care.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, one time, $8.99. It's $99 a month, and that it provides backup to the cloud. It provides all the updates that are seamless. You never have to do anything on your end. It just happens overnight. It's like magic.
It's the syncing and everything
it's
else that's part of it.
It's the syncing and any new features we add on, anything like that. So it's very it's easy to use.
So call it then $900 in the front end, and then around $100 a month.
Right.
And incidentally, let me make clear for those of you who may be more skeptical in our audience. While we do have people on who provide services to seniors, we get no compensation, and furthermore, you know, no one is on here as an advertiser. The people we ask to come on here,
right.
they offer, sometimes they'll be with companies and they'll offer product or services that we think are wonderful, and that's the reason they're on here.
Right.
And so with you, we're talking about Gray Matters Alliance, and so I think that while some people cannot afford such a service, it does make sense to think about it. And what's even more exciting is that this is the early phases, I'm sure, of an industry that's going to gain a lot more momentum in this capability.
It's ever evolving. I know Mercy, for example, I think it's in the Valley, you know, they can video chat with all their patients remotely. You know, we do the same thing. That's what's going on here. So, yeah, the technology is ever evolving. You know, there's a shortage of caregivers out there.
Right.
And something has to be done. Something has to, and our population's growing in age, and so you have to come up with different solutions.
So why is it not in the interest of insurance companies?
Exactly.
To pay for part of this? And I assume that the money you mentioned is not going to be paid for by.
Unfortunately, both the driving and this is private pay. And you would think both, you know, one's a preventative, and,
right.
and so is this one, really. So Grand Care Systems is the name of the technology, and they have been in talks with some insurance companies, but we know how that goes. We don't know, you know, how that's going to proceed. But yeah, that would be great, wouldn't it?
It would. I mean, I could think of, they could probably identify several things, incidents that could occur. That could result in huge right. costs to the insurance company that right. could probably be prevented.
Well, and like readmission to hospital visits and that type of thing. A lot of times people are released. The goal is to get them out as quickly as possible. But then if they're back in the hospital, then that's another huge expense.
Right. Well, and the hospitals are getting dinged. They're getting fined for 30-day readmissions. You know, they don't want them back there that quick.
From
you know,
Medicare or Medicaid.
Yeah, they, you know, they're getting hit. So, and, you know, they're going to make up the losses somehow. So all of our other Medicare or, health care goes up in price. So it really is meant, this particular product is actually meant to avoid the 30-day readmissions, you know, so to catch things. You know, if you were just released for UTI, your mom gets UTIs all the time.
What's UTI? Sorry.
Urinary tract infection.
Okay.
Not a great subject to talk about, but so you put a pressure mat in front of the toilet and you set your alerts. If mom utilizes the bathroom more than 5 times in a 2-hour period between the hours of, you know, 10 p.m. and 4 a.m. to alert me, mom's on her way to getting another UTI. I'm going to get her to the doctor and get her on medications before this festers and becomes something much bigger that she ends up in the hospital for.
So it's very customizable.
Oh, there's probably no two alike in the world, and we are all over the world. So Gray Matters isn't the but grand care product, systems yeah. is. Yeah. And so, yeah, I mean, you know, you want to avoid those 30-day readmissions.
Let me point out here that I see this coming from two different angles. One is I can see where people in the medical profession would be very interested in getting feedback about, you know, technical or medical information. I see that. In other words, someone sitting on the other end receiving this information who's a professional in the healthcare industry, whether it's insurance company people or whoever. Mm-hmm. But then I see, on the other hand, that somebody who's just a loved one mm-hmm. who may not be capable of utilizing much detail in terms of medical information, but are interested in the big picture items. Mm-hmm. You know, did mom get out of bed today?
Right.
And when did she get out of bed today? If she got mm-hmm. out of bed at noon, maybe that's not a good sign.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
And if mom, you know, maybe entering the restroom, well, I don't know if that would, that might be too technical if I were thinking about what are the fundamentals I want to know. I want to know mom and dad got up. Maybe the refrigerator question, are they eating? Mm-hmm. I definitely want to know if there was any fall that occurred.
Absolutely.
So I could probably think of a few other things.
Medication.
But,
are they taking their medications? Yeah. Because that seems to be one that, mm-hmm. I mean, I've known people that have, oh, yeah, I got it. They would go over every week and put out all the pills. And then they'd go back the next week and the pills would still be in there, yep. even though grandpa had said, yeah, I took my medicine. All yeah. Right. Yeah, are you sure? Go look. Go lift the lid. I mean, this would be a way to just tell you that.
Yeah, a little prompt will pop up as a reminder and say, it's time to take this pill. There's a picture of the pill, so that confusion is alleviated.
On this large screen.
On this large screen, it'll tell the loved one when to take it, why they're taking it. This is for your diabetes. It'll tell you how to take it. Take it with food, take it with water, or take it in the morning, take it in the night. But you could have an alert pop up 10 different times a day for 10 different medications. And there's also a button on there that says, I took it, remind me later, or refuse to take it. So that way you get some acknowledgement. Now you're not there watching them take it. They could be fooling
right.
you. But if you're also watching the other signs, like blood pressure.
Yeah, you would know.
Then you would know. Like, if mom's blood pressure is still high, she's either not taking her medicine like she said she is, or the dose isn't right. Either way, I'm going to get on it before something bad happens.
Now, there are probably some adult children who would drill down that far, you know, who the ones who are engineers maybe or whatnot. But I see the utility, though, on a little more basic level, the fact that you have this screen, and granted, I would have a very low bar in terms of expectations of my parents using some technology. But yeah. when you're talking about this simple screen.
No, it's if they can push a microwave button, they can use it.
Yeah, and a message that pops up with a ding or a sound mm-hmm. that calls them to look at it. I would think that'd have a pretty good chance of generating
they
a
could
response.
Probably do that. Oh, yeah.
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 And then just the idea of having some cameras. In a way, it seems intrusive, so you'd want your parents to be 100% behind it.
Exactly.
But if they agreed, yeah, this is in my interest, you know, just to have some cameras in areas of the house where they feel comfortable. And so you can be sitting in your office mm-hmm. in St. Louis mm-hmm. and just go online. Mm-hmm. And I assume you go online to read the data from this screen.
Any internet device, yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so you can actually see mom. Mm-hmm. Maybe she's sitting in the living room. Maybe she's not out of bed, whatever. Mm-hmm. I really see the value of that. Mm-hmm.
Well, we do load. Skype is automatically loaded on here. You don't need to log on every time you use it. And we also have another video chat system called MediCall, and that is the HIPAA compliant. So the doctors and nurses and social workers and everybody can talk to them that way and still be, you know, under the mm-hmm. HIPAA rules. But family, I could be at work on any given day, and I can video chat in to see mom and talk to her face-to-face. And I can say, how are you doing? I can mm-hmm. kind of look around and make sure she's, you know, upright and looking good.
Yeah. I mean, this has to be the future. I mean, whatever listening to this, I mean, the bottom line is it may seem a little, technical or remote or not warm, but, I mean, technology is a tool. It's a blessing. And if used properly, it people live longer and they're safer.
But I think many are starting to embrace technology a lot more than maybe they're used to. I mean, I know lots of grandparents who are Skyping with their grandkids.
Oh, absolutely.
Because it does that very thing that you want to do, which is connectedness.
That's right.
They're Skyping with their grandkids. I want them to hear my voice. Mm-hmm. I want to see how they are. Mm-hmm. And it makes sense that it's going to continue as we age.
That's right.
And we can still have that connectedness, even though we may not live in the same city.
Exactly.
Just 10 minutes. May not even be a long time. 5 minutes, 10 minutes. Yeah.
I have clients that eat dinner with their grandkids across the country. We have grandkids, you know, adult children that live outside of the state that will stream in a wedding or church services or a basketball game.
That is incredible.
That way they're not out of the loop.
We did that with my younger son's grandparents who live out of town. He had a piano recital, and we sent it live while they were online watching his piano recital.
Yeah, cool.
And I did that too, incidentally, regarding one of my daughter's violin concerts. But let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. The idea of having dinner, I mean, I'm wondering, can you actually get the sense of, you know, in other words, I'm wanting to believe that we could, you know, enjoy it at least in some ways as much as we might.
Yeah.
So people actually do this.
Oh, yeah. They'll just sit and eat their dinner and chat, you know, about their day's activities. And just like you would if you were there.
And each simultaneously seeing each other.
Oh, right. Absolutely, yes.
But again, if you eat dinner by yourself all the time, mm-hmm. which a loved one all by themselves might be just eating by themselves.
Right.
So once or twice a week you eat with another person what a great thing to do. Yeah.
Even in communities, you know, where you have all these people around you, sometimes you just don't want to be around them. You just want to talk to your family, and they can video chat in and talk to you in your room.
Wouldn't that be interesting? Scheduling dinner with mom in Florida and being able to have a large enough screen mm-hmm. to where it is similar in some ways mm-hmm. to that in person.
Keeps them in there, you know, and the video chat too. You know, you got some dementia patients that, you know, are afraid to answer the phone because they don't know who's on the other end. And they can't think quick enough to know, you know, to say, hi, Bob, you know, good to talk.
And it may be somebody that they should know and they won't know and they'd be embarrassed.
And it avoids scammers and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Because when this, you know, when their phone rings, a picture of who's calling comes in, a caller ID, and it says who it is. Hey, this is your nephew, Joe. You know,
So that comes on the screen. It's connected to the phone as well. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it shows a picture of the person. Assuming the person's in the database, which you'd put all the people, the
caregivers, the families can put in whomever. Yes. Yep.
Now, who does all that? Is that something the company does and kind of sets it up?
We can help, but this is so simple to use. It's if it's this, then that. So you put it all in. It's all drop down boxes and you pick this and you pick that. It's super easy to set up, but we provide all the training.
Yeah. And if you want, in other words, some of the people listening would say, yeah, I know it may be simple, but I'd rather have you guys do it so they can pay, whether it's a fee or whatever it is, you all come in and program it.
We sure do. And everything's wireless too. So it's kind of out of the box situation. You know, the contact sensors and the motion sensors, it works very much like your security system at home. If you've ever put your own little sensors in, it's very easy.
Now let me ask you this. I assume there'd be additional costs to this $800 or so on the front mm-hmm. end, or $900, whatever it was, mm-hmm. and then the $100 or so a month. There'd be additional costs if you had cameras around the house?
Well, we don't do the cameras. I mean, we would kind of contract with somebody to, if that's the route you wanted to go. So your blood pressure, your scale, your thermometer, your sensors, those are all extra, but they're very nominal. I think some of the sensors are $25. I think the most I've seen is a blood pressure cuff. It's like $350, that sort of thing. So, and not everybody needs the wellness part. Sometimes they just want the social connected part.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and they start out slow and then build on it.
So then
you wouldn't have to have it all at one
time. No, not at all. You might just want to load photos, get them used to it, mm-hmm. and then introduce letters, you know, and then maybe some video and some tutorials.
So if somebody does want the cameras, they can. Your system will integrate well with that so that the cameras can be installed and that video can be fed through your system?
I'm sure it can. We haven't done that. I haven't done that myself with the cameras. But I'm sure it can.
I mean, I'm thinking that would be mm-hmm. the simplest way for me to see immediately, mm-hmm. you know, how mm-hmm. things are. And mm-hmm. and assuming, your parents have to consent.
Oh, absolutely.
Of course, but...
Absolutely.
But I think a lot would, especially depending on where the cameras are put.
Well, right. But. And if you explain, too, it's like this or you go into a community.
Mm-hmm.
Because somebody needs to watch you, you know. Somebody needs to keep an eye on you.
That's
sure
a very good
safe.
Point. And you mentioned that a while ago. So
it would allow someone on those close calls, mm-hmm. and where you know you're just not comfortable enough to have mom and dad without someone there with them. Mm-hmm. You're weighing the expense of having someone come in. If they don't qualify for some sort of Medicaid coverage,
right.
then you're talking about $22 to $25 an hour mm-hmm. for a person to come in with any of these services that provide home care.
Right.
So it's going to be around, say, $25 an hour. So you think about how many hours there are in a week, mm-hmm. and you decide how many hours do we need somebody there. So even when you're doing the alternate day thing,
right.
which is what the vast majority of people could not do five or much right. less seven right. days a week.
Right. This is a good supplement.
So this would allow them to postpone that decision. So I can see where the cost, if you view it that way,
right.
Would get you a, you know, would return a lot mm-hmm. on the money.
Yeah, absolutely. I think so much of health is more of a decline, and it's not, I mean, you have occasionally those people where they were fine, they had a fall, their life changed drastically.
Right.
You have those, but then I think there's so many that just fall into this natural sort of a slow descent mm-hmm. to where they're not quite where they were, but they're not quite over here, and there's a lot right. of gray area.
A lot of gray, and this will...
No, go ahead. We have 30 seconds. Okay. I just indicated 30 seconds. Vicki looks at me and like, oh, my God.
Like, what does that mean?
All right. So, Vicki, what we have to do, though, is have you back.
I would love to be back, yes.
These are the good sessions. It's when we're just charging forward and time is, you know, yep. is it mm-hmm. just flies. So lots of useful information. Vicki Sprawl with Gray Matters Alliance. And we will be back next week with another wonderful guest on Elder Talk.
You've been listening to Elder Talk, providing smart strategies for seniors with attorney CPA Joe Cordell. Listen again next Saturday for another edition of Elder Talk, sponsored by Cordell Planning Partners, your elder law advisors. For more information, visit eldercarelaw.com. That's eldercarelaw.com. The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely on advertisements.